Catapult of propaganda. The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us. A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill. The military's industrial contract.
I'm Derek Gilbert, and we've got a special presentation tonight. Carl Schwartz is on the road, and he's been talking with a lot of folks as he travels around this country, and has turned up some information that we felt important enough that we wanted to bring it out as a special interview. Carl, thanks for joining us again on PID Radio.
Well, thanks for having me back on.
It is really unsettling. That's one adjective. I keep using the word disturbing, and I'm trying to find synonyms, other words that mean the same thing.
Infuriating.
depressing in a way to see that our government, for a lot longer than we thought, has been messing about in other people's business and still trying to present to the American public the myth that we're the good guys, and if it weren't for us standing up for freedom around the world, there wouldn't be any left. And the more we find out, the more we find out that that's just not necessarily so.
What should we call it to be polite? PR?
That's one abbreviation. BS would be another.
Yeah, let me see, a whole new acronym, BSPR.
Yeah. I went to college with a fellow back in the early 80s who was required to go home to Iran. He was an Iranian exchange student. Well, not an exchange student. He came over and was studying in the U.S. He had to go home and fight in the war on break.
Uh-huh.
We would have a break between Thanksgiving and the middle of January, and he would go home for 6-8 weeks, and he would fight against the Iraqis. And I bet if he's still around, Mahmoud would be very surprised to learn that we had fingers in both pies over there, Iraq and Iran.
Yep.
We're dealing in an area of the world in which we've been messing about for a long time. I mean, even going back even before the Iran-Iraq war, with our assistance to put the Shah of Iran into power, and the way he was allowed to fall out of power, the support that we gave to Saddam Hussein when he came to power in Iraq. The people that you've been talking to as you travel around, Carl, have you run into anybody who can shed any more light into what we've been doing over there over the last 30 years?
Well, I can't say for the last 30, but I can say what has happened ever since the election year of 1987-88, when George Herbert Walker Bush was running as president after having served first as CIA director and then as the Reagan vice president. This gentleman, I mean, when I first started talking to him, it was about the depleted uranium and the different type of vaccines he's been exposed to that just have upended this man's health, okay?
Now, this man you're talking about, somebody who served in the military back then?
Yes, he is Army Special Forces Ranger.
Okay.
And, I knew he was this Desert Storm veteran, but what I didn't know was he had actually two tours of duty over there starting in 1987, 88, and 89. Then he came back home for a while and was sent back over there as part of Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and then what they call Desert Calm.
Desert Calm, okay.
And he had been telling me for quite some time that there was some things that we couldn't discuss over the phone or email. We'd have to do it face-to-face. So on this last massive road trip of mine, which was 4,215 miles in 8 days and nine meetings, I took the chance to go sit down and talk with him face-to-face for 2 hours. And I got more than I bargained for. That's why I'm doing this email update. We all have looked at, the official PR of, well, there is no Desert Storm, or maybe it was because Saddam, exposed our troops to sarin gas or VX gas or stuff like that. But, most intelligent people already know that he got that stuff from us. And this soldier filled in the blanks for me as to what extent we have been over there meddling, mucking things up, and even inciting things to try to control the outcome.
In other words, creating order out of chaos.
Well, creating chaos out of order. They actually had pretty good order until we got there.
You're right, just not the shape of the order that we wanted, apparently.
But, you know, the thing that I have focused on is to what extent George Herbert Walker Bush did a lot of things that even he has mumbled about over the years, that if Americans knew what we had done, they'd run us out of town. And then his son gets into power and starts slapping secret on everything all the way back, I guess, to George W.'s birth.
So he's
trying to make sure we are not entitled to know the truth. Well, you know, if you're looking for the truth and you're going to stay after it and you start finding bits and pieces, then it makes better sense of why George thinks everything has to be a secret.
Okay, so we're talking about George W. has sealed all of George H.W.'s papers?
Yes. CIA papers, vice presidential papers, presidential papers.
Hmm.
He don't want anybody digging into this to find the truth. And this soldier shared a few things with me that your listeners are going to be possibly very interested in, and a lot of them will probably be horrified. For example, United States forces actually use CBW weapons on the Iranians. Chemical and biological weapons. And then we're running around acting like we're on some kind of moral high ground here. We used them.
We used them against the Iranians.
We have used lethal force against the Iranians during that period of time. You know, literally baiting them into things and then just chewing them up. Now, most people know, well, we armed Saddam, and Saddam was firing all this artillery and stuff at the Iranians. But what they don't know is that American troops were also firing on the Iranians.
Okay, just for context now, the war between Iraq and Iran lasted essentially from the fall or late summer of 1980 to the late summer of 1988.
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay.
So during that period of time, this gentleman was over there. When he came home and started talking about it, he's actually testified. Excuse me. He has testified in front of the Senate Armed Services or House Armed Services or the Joint Committee. As soon as he got back to his home state, they stripped him and threw him into a psych ward for daring to speak out publicly about what was happening over there. One, EC spoke out about the fact that people were getting sick off the vaccines. Two, he spoke about the fact that the CBW was used against the Iranians by U.S. troops. Excuse me, I'm having problems with my voice. And then lastly, he was telling me about the fact that the French were building a nuclear reactor over there and they had already turned it up. Now, they didn't have a power grid to justify, you know, full power on this thing, but U.S. warplanes hit an ongoing nuclear reactor, and it spread out U-236, Neptunium, and plutonium. Not only were the Iraqis exposed to it, but U.S. troops that were in country as advisors to Iraq were exposed to it.
So you're not talking about the reactor that we know about, the Israelis destroying, the Oserac.
No, Oserac. Oserac hadn't even gone online.
So this was another nuclear reactor that Saddam had in country that was destroyed by American planes?
By American planes.
When did this happen?
89 and 90.
Wow.
I mean, we're sitting over there stirring up, you know, we're just basically stirring the pot to create this chaos so then we can go in and look like the heroes. But the problem is, we are the problem.
Now, Carl, when was the... Now the raid on the Oserac reactor...
1981.
...was 81.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this other reactor was... where was it? The one that we took out.
It was in the southern part. And the guy said, he said, to this day, he said, they're swearing up and down it wasn't them. He said, but we were over there as part of the operations. We know it was them. And they sent us in, and a lot of our people got exposed to some really deadly stuff. And then I looked at him. I said, well, no wonder they're so callous disregard about depleted uranium. They've done far worse.
The place is already glowing.
Yeah, the place is already glowing.
Huh.
You start looking at the cancer statistics coming out of, I haven't seen any cancer statistics out of Iran, but they're close enough to this entire mess, and so is Kuwait.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy befriended one of the Kuwaiti princes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me at lunch, he said, this is a quote, and he said, and I hate to be obscene about this, he said, but this Kuwaiti prince, his attitude is the United States doesn't even supply the KY jelly when they're bending you over. You know, they're over there trying to force the hand of everybody into our will and our way. If they can't get it their way, you know, first they send in the covert ops. You know, they try to upend them that way, through intelligence operations. Then they go through covert military operations, and they try to whip it up and stir it up into a war.
So
we can win hands down because nobody can stand up to us militarily.
Right. Now
this is a strategy that's been going on since before Bush Sr. took office.
So we began with backing Saddam in the war against Iran, which lasted for 8 years, the longest conventional war in the 20th century.
Right.
Killed about 1.5 million people.
Right.
And as soon as that was over, we apparently continued our meddling in there, beginning in 1989, 1990, with other operations, covert ops.
Trying to stir it up to start another war so they could go take Saddam out. And evidently, you know, as you know, I mean, if you've read Norman Schwarzkopf's book, they were ready to go all the way to Baghdad back then, and they were called off.
Right.
And then George Herbert Walker Bush tells the Shiites, stand up for Iraqi freedom, 1,000 points of light, say, go the course, you know, all the stupid stuff that comes out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden we wind up with a lot of mass graves over there that are either a direct result of the Iran war or a direct result of the Shiite uprising.
Mm.
And the Bush family doesn't want their fingerprints on the fact that about 3 out of every 5 people found in mass graves over there are a direct result of the policies of a previous administration.
Now, in between the Iran-Iraq war and going in and taking out Saddam in the Persian Gulf War, what were we doing to kind of stir the pot and get some shooting going on over there?
Well, this guy served in a whole list of operations. One was called Prime Chance 1, was post security in the Persian Gulf for oil tankers.
Mm-hmm.
Prime Chance 2 was for that, too. You know, the big booger bear. This happened back during the Reagan administration, the latter part of it, back when, you know, somebody said, well, if Iran shuts down the Straits of Hormuz, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so immediately they cooked up a reason to go in there. At that point in time, Iran was not threatening any of their Arab neighbors over there. Then they had one called Praying Mantis, where they literally lured, Iranians were lured into an ambush with what you would call vastly superior U.S. forces.
Mm-hmm.
They literally just chewed them up. What little bit they had as a navy was nothing but patrol boats with, basically 20-millimeter cannon guns on it, just for cruising and protecting their own oil platforms out in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm. I did a little reading on that this afternoon, didn't have much time, but I thought it was interesting that a professor at the Naval War College, who has written a book just published within the last year or two, listed 5 key sea battles in the history of the United States that established the United States dominance as a naval power. I mean, going back to the Battle of Lake Erie in what, War of 1812.
Right.
And the fifth of these battles, I mean, the fourth one was the Battle of Midway during World War II, and then the fifth one was Operation Praying Mantis in the Gulf, in the Persian Gulf.
Yes.
I mean,
and
this
what
was
that basically did is that took out the Iranian Navy. Yeah, if you want to call it a navy, it was more. I mean, I think the river patrol boats in Pittsburgh, and you know, some of our like on Hudson River,
mm-hmm.
have far bigger navies than you know than what the Iranians had. But yeah, they claim that as a great victory. And then Nimble Archer,
mm-hmm.
That was the one that came right after it. That's where U.S. forces used gases and bios on Shiite Iranians at Halabja.
Now
that's the one he was literally incarcerated for in a psych ward because he dared to speak of it in a Senate hearing.
Okay, this is your contact now, the former Special Forces.
Yes,
man. Now, what were we doing fighting the Iranians then in during this Nimble Archer episode?
We had already backed Saddam, so it was pretty clear we'd already picked sides.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what Americans have not been told, oh, by the way, we were in a shooting war over there with Saddam at Iran, and we killed some Iranians. When he started telling me about what they did with the use of CBW, and then I watch all these sanctimonious bastards, excuse my French, standing up here talking about defending the world from CBW. You know, we have a problem in this country where we've got a government that's not hemmed in by the truth.
Yeah, it does get inconvenient at times when it stands in the way of what you want to do. Yeah, this is a little mind-boggling. I mean, I lived through this history, and I didn't pay that much attention to it, or what I did hear was, you know, filtered through the mainstream media, and, of course, it was all portrayed as the evil mullahs, the ayatollahs, who were forcing our hand to defend the flow of oil through the Straits of Hormuz to protect the peaceful Kuwaitis.
Well, that's what we got on our mainstream, but the truth of the matter is we were the ones over there stirring it up to provoke an attack so that an attack was warranted in the first place.
So how do you interpret all of that, or how did your contact, this Special Forces soldier, interpret our activity over there? What was the purpose?
Well, according to him, and what he quoted is his friend from Kuwait, one of the princes from Kuwait, the problem in the Mideast is the United States. Bottom line.
And what was our purpose over there trying to provoke a shooting war with Iran?
Take over the Middle East, you know, step by step by step. And you back up and you look at it, I said, well, that may be in our best interest when it comes to oil. But when you look at the failed energy policies of every administration since Carter, you know, where nobody has tried to lift a finger on energy policy in this country. It's all been whatever big oil wants. And then they start going in and fabricating these wars. They're literally creating the circumstance. They're also creating the animosity. I mean, when most people get shot at, they tend to shoot back. The problem is our government doesn't admit we shot first.
Yeah, and that's we talked about it this past week with some examples from our own history, going back to the example of the USS Maine in Havana Harbor. In fact, sometimes nobody has to shoot at all. We just take a convenient explosion and can turn that into reason for war. I want to talk a little bit more about that nuclear plant in Iraq. Who was building that plant? Was it another French project?
Yeah, it was a French project. And evidently they had brought this one online a little faster. It was not in the Osirak area. It was in another area. And they had already started warming up the core, so to speak. You know, they put a core in place.
Okay.
Our planes took it out.
Did the French make any complaint, or did any of this get into the European press?
I haven't found anything in the European press about it, but I found this guy to be very credible. I mean, everything he's told me is checked out. I mean, I had never heard of Praying Mantis, and I'd never heard of Nimble Archer. And I've talked to other people that are aware of both of those operations. So, you know, it wasn't just him over there. There was other people as well.
Right. Yeah, in fact, those are both on the web. I was doing some checking on that this afternoon. The one thing that I couldn't find anything on, but I didn't have a lot of time to check, was the existence of another nuclear plant in Iraq other than the Osirak plant. However,
well, I thought at one time when he was talking to me about this that what we were talking about was the Al-Qaim situation, you know, where they found all the WMD. But that it was not that site, but it was near there.
Okay. Well, we'll do a little more digging on that. I will say that we did turn up some stuff this week in conjunction with the aftermath of the Battle of Baghdad, that a lot of people who were close to the airport were exposed to something there. I don't think it had anything to do with a nuclear plant. It might have had something to do with the type of weapons that we were using, a nuclear device of some sort during the Battle of Baghdad, but that's another story.
We're finding the same thing over in Afghanistan. I mean, we already know, because we've seen the soil samples coming out of Afghanistan, that And they've never had a nuclear reactor, by the way. But when you find strontium 90, U-236, neptunium, which is that's a 239 element that biodegrades right back into plutonium 239.
Mm-hmm.
Those didn't get there on their own. And it highly suggests that the United States has used bunker busters with nuclear warheads on them.
Hmm. That is very interesting, because that has been speculated. The use of bunker busters against a future attack against Iran has been speculated.
Yeah, but I think they've already done the warm-ups. In fact, one of my email updates, I put in a thing in there where the Army had already put out, or the Pentagon had already put out a bid for that type of a weapon with an expediting testing process. And I raised the question, I said, well, I wonder if they tested it in Afghanistan, since the bid predated that by, about 2 years.
Hmm.
So even before we attacked Afghanistan, they were already in the process of developing and expediting the testing procedures of nuclear TIF bunker busters.
Yeah, and lest people think we're exaggerating here, there was an article that was published in the, I believe it was American Conservative, Pat Buchanan's magazine, by a guy who writes on intelligence matters, who said that the office of the vice president had authorized the use of tactical nukes in the event that they needed to take out underground bunkers in Iran.
If you look at constitutional law, the office of the vice president isn't exactly authorized to do that.
No, the flowchart doesn't go through that office.
No, it doesn't go through that office. That's why he's the president of the Senate, and he's not the chief, the commander in chief.
Well, yeah, Karen Katowski has written some very enlightening articles about the way the office of the vice president, through the Office of Special Plans, has influenced the war policy over the last 5 years or so. So,
yeah,
what is
factory?
What is the grand scheme here? If we're looking at Brzezinski would call the grand chessboard, what is the ultimate goal, do you think, of the neocons controlling policy right now?
I think they're trying to consolidate all of Central Asia and the Middle East under U.S. control, and I think they're willing to pull any dirty stunt, whether it's covert intelligence or covert military or flagrant use of military force to do that.
Did your contact have any knowledge of actions in Central Asia, the stands, back in
yes,
the late 80s?
Because he almost got pulled up and positioned for Operation Step Shield, which was something while they were planning Desert Storm and while they were actively involved in stirring up everything with Iran, while we were still backing Iraq, but we were still planning on attacking him in 1990 and 91, he was to be sent over to the Kazakhstan. They were afraid that Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan mm-hmm. were all going to fall into civil war with the breakup of the Soviet Union.
Well, that would be in keeping with their history. They did basically that after World War One.
Yes, but what they were planning on doing was going in there and seizing these oil fields during the middle of that chaos.
Okay.
Now, if you back up one step further, what caused the breakup of Russia? And it was because people like Leo Wanta and some other folks were out there with trillions of dollars hammering on their currency and hammering on their economy to create the meltdown of their economy.
Okay. So we basically drove the Soviet Union into bankruptcy.
Yes.
So you don't need guns in order to wage war.
No. I mean, they're doing intelligence warfare. They're doing communications warfare. They're doing financial and economic warfare. And when none of their ways get met, if they can't do the covert CIA-type stuff, if they can't do the covert military, then they send in the wet boys. And then if they can't assassinate the guy to get him out of their way, then they start fabricating a war.
Now, the countries in Central Asia, the former Soviet republics, have an awful lot of natural gas, an awful lot of oil. We've talked about that before.
Yes.
There's also a very heavy Muslim presence in those countries.
Yes, very heavy.
And a strong nationalistic streak there. And they want to, in fact, not just there, but even in the westernmost province of China, Xinjiang province. And Is this all part of a scheme then to use that what I guess you'd call it the pan-Turkic movement?
Yeah, it's creating, you know, Muslim boogeymen so they can justify these type of actions and go after these people.
Okay. So
we talked about that on the last show. I mean, this global war on terror is about as shallow and about as bogus as anything I've ever seen. I mean, terrorism is a strategy. It is not an army.
Right. You can't. In other words, you're trying to declare war against an idea or a tactic rather than a nation state.
Yeah, and how do you declare war on something when it was you that instigated it and caused the problem?
Well, looking at it another way, if you're declaring war on an idea, that it's like trying to get rid of cockroaches. Every time you shine light on a new place, they just scuttle somewhere else, which allows you to continue the war indefinitely.
Yeah, I have a friend that's been fighting fire ants on their five-acre property. I just told him, I said, you might as well just sell it and move up north because you're not going to win that war.
No, that's a fact. So what we've got is what appears to be a, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but we've got what looks like an organized plan, a game plan that dates back to the Reagan administration to stir up trouble in Central Asia and the Middle East, specifically for the purpose of going in guns a-blazing to take control of their natural resources.
We're creating the circumstances so that we can, we're playing the role of the Black Knight so we can switch hats and go be the White Knight, and everybody just thinks it's so wonderful that we're standing up to freedom and liberty and democracy and things like that, and it is all a sham.
Have we found...
I mean, phrased another way, Derek, the world's leading terrorist is the United States government in its current hands.
Well, like I said, that's not only distressing, it's depressing. Carl, have we found anything in Iraq that connects the United States to the whole setup of Saddam? I mean, was Saddam basically just set up as a patsy?
Yeah, I mean, some of the things, if you look at the sanctions period and you study what they were doing during the sanctions, they were not allowing medicine in there. At the same time, they were intentionally blowing up their water and their wastewater treatment plants and turning Iraq into a sewer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They were also denying them farm implements. For example, and this was a battle that went on for about 3 years, they needed machines to mill wheat so they could make bread for their people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the UK and the US sat there in these damn committee meetings claiming dual use, dual use, dual use, you know, where they could be used for agricultural or military uses, which was bogus as hell. I mean, even the UN reports and some of the articles I've read about that expose that. But at the same time, during those sanctions, all sorts of deadly stuff was finding its way into the country, and it wasn't his black market that was getting it there, it was ours.
Now,
that's what I was reporting on when I reported on the type of RDX explosives, 380 tons of RDX that they found at Alkane. It was a type of RDX that Eastman Chemical invented, and they didn't even get the patent on it till 97.
Now, wait a minute. The patent on this the RDX, explain what that is.
RDX is an advanced form of C4 explosives that burns very specifically, and it's kind of like a magnum. You know, the difference between, say, a 38 and a 357 magnum, even though they're both, you know, the same type bore.
Mm-hmm.
The 357 is much more powerful because of the nature of the powder.
Right, okay.
The powder burns slower and creates more, what it does is just kind of builds up and builds up and builds up the pressure and then releases it instead of going off like a firecracker. Well, RDX is the type of C4 explosives, or what you call a plastic-type explosive, that is used for detonating nuclear warheads.
Detonating nuclear warheads.
Now, at the same time that he didn't even have a nuclear warhead program going on,
mm-hmm.
during the sanctions, all of a sudden he winds up with 380 tons, and as soon as they found it, and as soon as it was photographed, that story disappeared off the face of the earth.
Now, I vaguely remember when that TV station in Minneapolis reported on that story.
Yes.
That, hey, we found the weapons of mass destruction. We found it.
Yeah, we found it. It had the U.S. It had the U.S. brand all over it.
So the picture, are there pictures of this that document that this stuff was the Eastman manufacturer?
Yes. Yeah, they actually had photographs on their website for quite some time, and we got copies of the photographs and then started comparing backwards as to what generation of RDX and their packaging were we looking at.
Mm-hmm. And this was determined to be the stuff that was not patented until 97 or 98?
Wasn't even invented and patented until then. So sometime after 1997, during the Clinton administration, 380 tons of this stuff mysteriously winds up at Alkane.
That's a lot of explosive. A tractor trailer only carries about 22 tons.
Yeah.
So we're talking about 12, 15 truckloads there.
That's true. And you could detonate an awful lot of hydrogen bombs with that type of explosive.
What would be the purpose of positioning that stuff in Iraq?
Well, maybe we were framing him for WMD, or maybe we were getting ready to try to move it elsewhere and frame somebody else.
Wouldn't it seem a
and
little...
It dawned on me due to where Al-Qaim is. It might even been Mossad.
Now, where is Al-Qaim?
Al-Qaim is kind of in the southern third.
Okay, all right. It seems a little odd that they would put that out there as a means of framing Saddam and then use something that could be traced back to the U.S. post-97.
They didn't think anybody was going to trace it back.
Okay, so the idea was to just have it there and then just have pictures taken of it or whatever, and then...
Well, there wasn't supposed to be a film crew there. It's supposedly just U.S. military personnel, but one of the embedded teams was there. They photographed it, and pictures did get out.
Okay.
In fact, some of the stuff they found in this one bunker over there was in wooden shipping crates, heavy-duty shipping crates, about a half-inch thick, wood on the sides,
mm-hmm.
maybe thicker than that, and had United States stamped on it.
Oops.
Had France stamped on it. Had Russian stamped on them, some of them.
Mm-hmm. Well... I guess the question, the big question is who sold the material and who handled it in between here and there?
Well, that's a good question. I'd like to know how he could get RDX during 1997, 98, maybe 90, as late as 99, when he couldn't even get machines to grind wheat.
Yeah, and I would expect that... That kind of quantity is not something you'd smuggle in very easily. It's not certainly not the kind of thing that you or I could just go up to the plant and buy, I would think, over the counter.
Their trucks and their rows don't hold 83,000 pounds, okay?
I wouldn't think.
What they have over there, you could basically just do the math. If you just put, say, 15 or 20 tons, you're talking 15 to 20 trucks of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Basically, they've got little box trucks carrying all this stuff instead of the 40-foot-long tractor trailers that we can carry over here.
Right.
That's a lot of truckloads of RDX.
It is.
What? Yeah, it's mind-boggling when you start to really piece all this together and look at the implications. So basically, your contact and what we know about through news accounts is that we have actually had boots on the ground from... What, 1987 on?
1987 on. And they've been there for the sole purpose of, keeping the oil flowing, but they also have been over there stirring up trouble.
And we say boots on the ground, we mean not just in Iraq, but also in Iran. Would that be correct?
Yes. I mean, some of the stuff we were doing over there in 87, 88, 89 were incursions.
Hmm.
Violation of sovereign territory.
Did you ask your contact about Syria? Is any of this going on in Syria?
Well, if you look at how many Marine Expeditionary Forces we've got on their border, I'd say the answer is probably yes, it is going on.
Okay. Is it positioned right?
A lot of the Marines that have been killed over there have been killed out in those western provinces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some pretty serious skirmishes going on over there.
Hmm.
And I would say it's the same thing that they were doing to Iran and Iraq. They're stirring up dissension for an eventual attack.
Trying to provoke something by putting a tripwire right there on the border.
Yes. I mean, you can go all the way back to the Gulf of Tonkin incident. You know, now that historical documents have been released, what America was told about the Gulf of Tonkin was a damned lie.
Yeah.
It did not happen the way they said, and they used that as the excuse to escalate up to 560,000 soldiers.
This was reported, I didn't see it reported in the U.S. press. Maybe I overlooked it. I did see that story come out in an Australian newspaper, but it was the NSA that handed Lyndon Johnson information that they knew was false.
Yeah.
But...
And now we've got a military guy heading CIA that has a long track record of handing over false information.
Well, so what is this this contact doing now? Is he just basically lying lower?
100% disabled.
100% from what he's been exposed to?
Yes.
Yeah,
he wasn't shot or subjected to an explosion. Injured him, but he, due to the vaccines he was given and the exposures he got while he was over there for basically close to 6 years, his health is completely upended.
What have his doctors told him? I mean, have they identified what caused it specifically?
Well, one of the vaccines they were given was an experimental HIV vaccine. It was not an anthrax vaccine. And, they all wondered when he started being tested for DU, why he had not only DU exposure, but he also had exposure to more deadly stuff like plutonium and U-236.
Which, again, was the result of something that had been detonated over there.
Yes.
Well, Carl, this is very disturbing, but it's... stuff that we need to hear because we can't go through life with blinders on. And
well, it gives me a whole different perspective of when you look at the flag and you wonder what in the hell it is we're serving, and I'm beginning to wonder what it is they think they're serving.
That's
one of the things I've been watching for years. Our CIA is not out here protecting us from boogeymen and bad guys. They're out there stealing secrets from other people. They're out there creating, the groundwork for wars like we've just described on this show. And they're doing it not for America. They're doing it for the wealthy elite. They basically work for the people who own our government, more so than the American people. That's what I find disturbing.
What do you see as a... I mean, if there was something that Americans can do, what do you see as the most our best chance of putting an end to this and getting America closer to what we thought that flag stood for?
We're going to have to figure out some way to unseat the DNC and RNC and break their stranglehold on this government because they're both owned by the same people.
Funny you mention that. I just saw an op-ed piece in the LA Times yesterday that... pointed out a number of prominent young hawkish Democrats who sound an awful lot like the neocons did back during the Reagan years, or prior to the Reagan years, before they switched parties and became Republicans. It looks like they're getting ready to take over the Democratic Party if things don't go the Republicans' way in 2008.
Or go the Democrats' way, you mean? Yeah.
Well, basically what they're looking at is kicking out the MoveOn.org types, just like the neocons back in the 70s wanted to kick...
The Sorosites, yeah.
Right. Just like they wanted to kick out the McGovernites back in the 70s. And when they couldn't do that, they switched parties and became Republicans. Now it appears that the new generation of neocons is getting ready to either take over the Democratic Party or just switch parties back from Republican to Democrat. If the Democrats happen to take the White House in 08, you're right. It looks like a stage show, and it's
politics is perception.
Yeah. But how do we go about then, seeing as how they control the debate and they seem to control the media? I mean, we didn't see any of the other parties' candidates for president in the last election cycle at all. I mean, Nader got a little bit of press, but that was about it. How do we go about breaking the stranglehold of the media?
Well, one of the things
the parties and the media.
We're working with groups around the United States. Excuse me a second. We're working with groups around the United States to do basically a mock election and maybe even get in there, a very confrontational in-their-face election in 06. Put up a dark horse candidate with a platform, you know, of what I call Straighten Out America, Take Back America, whatever you want to call that platform.
Mm-hmm.
And put that up against Condoleezza, Frist, McCain, Jeb Bush. You know, on the other side of the aisle, they're offering us either Hillary or Gore. And none of the six people that are you know front runners for the two main parties right now have even the slightest intention of changing the status quo.
No.
And see if America is as angry as I think they are. I mean, I just went 4,215 miles in 8 days. Had 9 meetings. Each one of the meetings was anywhere from an hour to 3 hours, and did some very long hour drives. You know, got averaged about 3 to 4 hours sleep a day. Had a chance to talk to a lot of America. Even had a chance to talk to some people up in Canada, and the mood is changing. People are looking for answers, and they're beginning to realize that this is not the America that they believe in. You know, this isn't the red, white, and blue, and mom, and apple pie, and, you know, we stand up for what's right. You know, they're beginning to understand our government is the poster children for what's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll find out as we've got an election cycle coming up here, and then, of course, 2008 is going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, in fact, there's one group of retired military officers that have challenged the 9/11 Commission, whatever experts they want to put out on the table, they've challenged them to a debate on 9/11.
That would be very interesting to see. Very interesting to see. And it will be interesting also to see if anybody covers the hearings that Hugo Chavez is supposed to hold down in Venezuela.
Yeah, that would be real interesting because I know that the Venezuelan embassy is on my email update list, just to let you know. I mean, we've been in touch with them for about 8 months, and they are getting very interested about figuring out some way to defuse this, because there's some serious issues here. It's the sovereignty issues. You've got people literally fabricating wars. You've got people in there going in and stirring up the dissension, and if they can't get their way, you know, then they go to either drastic, lethal force measures, or they try to figure out how to wage economic warfare. Or they just come up and dream up something like 9/11 and go attack Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yep.
With a whole long list of countries they intend to flip because they do not want to be in bed with our major corporations.
Carl, it's been an education as always. I hate to cut short, but I've got a piece of equipment here that's beeping at me, which means the battery is on its last legs.
All right.
Before we get flipped off.
I've got to go get dinner. I've had a long day myself.
Well, Carl, I appreciate the information. We look forward to talking with you again. You're going to be out of pocket for a while, but we certainly will get hold of you as soon as we have.
Quasi out of pocket. I'll be very active.
All right. Well, keep us on the email list, and we will definitely put links in the show notes to this particular interview as to where people can go to find out where you're at, what you're writing, and how to get on your email list for your updates.
Okay. You and Sharon have a good evening.
We sure will. Carl Schwartz, thank you for being our guest on PID Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Bye. Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day.